Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. Few men in Washington these days know more about intelligence, briefings and otherwise, than our first guest. He is the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Pete Hoekstra, now returned to the private sector, where he is senior director in Greenberg and Traurig's government law and policy practice. He's also a Shulman senior fellow with the highly regarded Investigative Project on Terrorism. Congressman Hoekstra, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I guess this is your first appearance this year, so happy new year to you, despite what's been developing.
All right, Frank. Happy new year. It's good to be with you.
Well, speaking of what's been developing, I want to get your take, Congressman, on what you make of the tragedies, the jihadist attacks, the murderous devastation that we've seen, and the response of people in Europe to it in the past few days.
Well, I've got a couple of responses, Frank. Number one, obviously our sympathies go out to the French. I mean, it's a horrible tragedy. And at the same time, it's intense frustration. And frustration with the leaders of the free world for failing to recognize this global threat. We seem to bounce from one tragedy to the next, never realizing or never willing to face the true nature of this threat, that it is global, that it is an enduring threat, and that this is something that we should have anticipated and been preparing for years ago. You know, the leaders of NATO, these are the same leaders of NATO that have enabled and allowed Libya to become a failed state, a training ground for radical jihadists that is now exporting jihad to northern Africa, into the Middle East, and it's very close to Europe's, vulnerable southern border. You know, hopefully, finally, we're seeing another wake-up call to the West that says, recognize this threat, prepare for it, treat it for what it is. It is a war, and put in place the steps to confront it, contain it, and ultimately defeat it.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear you characterize it this way, and I know you've been warning of this for quite some time, that you've got a global jihadist movement and that we're not contending with it properly. We're not even acknowledging it as such. I wonder to what extent, Congressman Pete Hoekstra, you view that in part as a failure of our ability, or at least our willingness under, sadly, both Republican and Democratic administrations of late, to recognize that at its core, this really is an ideologically driven movement, one that has, by its adherence description, something called Sharia as the animating force. And how important is it to get our hands around that?
It's very important. If you don't confront the root causes of where this threat is coming from, we will never defeat it. And at a time now where you've got the president of Egypt, you know, raising the specter of this threat of radical Islam, where you have the Pope calling on leaders of Islam and of the Muslim community to call out their own extremists. And you think when you've got the president of Egypt and the Pope agreeing that the nature of this threat comes out of radical Islam, that maybe finally the United States and our president would recognize this, but they continue to refuse to acknowledge the root of this problem. And Frank, you're absolutely right. It was a problem in the Bush administration, and it continues, but to a much greater degree here in the Obama administration.
Yeah, we're speaking to Congressman Pete Hoekstra. He formerly represented Michigan's 2nd Congressional District in Congress from 1993 to 2010, and during that period was, among other things, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. And I just to drill down on that point, Congressman, we've seen this administration not only refusing to participate in that march in Paris, which they now acknowledge was a mistake, by the way, but that they have also sort of doubled down on this idea that this has nothing to do with Islam. This is really just countering violent extremism. I think you were there when they began, you know, adopting this obscurant, really, is the way I think of it, to the nature of the enemy. And to what extent, if we persist in this, is it likely to result in the kinds of problems that we saw in Europe manifesting themselves here as well?
Well, you know, we're well away from the situation in Europe. But if we don't identify this threat, and you're right, I was there when shortly after the president was inaugurated and we said we're not going to talk about extremism and terrorism anymore. I think the line at one point was we're going to call it man-made disasters, and it's like, wow, you know, where are we going? And well, we're seeing where we're going. It also, when you don't understand and recognize the threat for what it is, it means that as the president, you can reach out to the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which he has done. In Libya, you can reach out to radical jihadist groups to overthrow Gaddafi. And you believe that, you know, that's going to, when you engage with them and take advice from the Muslim Brotherhood here, and when you believe that it's our problem, that we're the cause, and that if we change who we are and we engage with them, they will change. I remember, you got to go back to, I think it was 2007, when the president, when the then candidate and now president of the United States said, you know, the day that I become president, the Muslim world will see us differently because I understand them. I grew up in Indonesia. You know, I heard the call to prayer, and you know, the problem is us. And if we change, they will change. And that's not the case. If we change and if we embrace them, they will see us as weak, and they will take that opportunity, they will take that weakness, and they will exploit it. And they have done that repeatedly over the last six and a half years.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Congressman, I've said this often on this program, but I really believe it can't stand overstatement. There is this problem that when we are behaving, whether we call it politically correct or being multiculturally sensitive or diversity minded or whatever, these jihadists regard this, as you say, as weakness, and more to the point, as submission on the part of an infidel. And under this doctrine of Sharia, their God-directed root duty is to make us feel subdued. So far from this being the end of it, it just ensures we will be afflicted with more of the violence yet to come. Congressman, let me switch gears very quickly because I want to get your take on this. There are now reports in France and perhaps elsewhere, that terror cells are being activated, and that the head of MI5, as you know, the preeminent intelligence service in Britain, is now warning that a major attack is coming there and that we better be alive to the dangers to us as well as the continental Europeans. I know you're not in the business of the Intelligence Committee anymore, but you're working with an absolutely indispensable organization, the Investigative Project on Terrorism. Does this sound right to you, and how concerned should we be about these warnings?
No, we should be very concerned. Frank, they have the capability to pull off the attacks in Europe, specifically France, Great Britain, the Netherlands. They have, I mean, when you've got a country like France, and I'm sure that they have the same situation in the UK, where you've got no-go zones, where the authorities can't just avoid those areas and don't go into those areas because they've become radicalized and, you know, they're it's not safe for tourists or for law enforcement officials to go. Those are breeding grounds. That's where people plan, prepare, and train for attacks. So it happens.
They're really Sharia enclaves right in the heart of these European nations. Congressman, we have to leave it at that. I'm afraid there's so much more to talk with you about. I hope that you'll come back to us often in 2015. This is really the moment when the kind of clarity that you bring to these issues and the principled responses to them is so desperately needed. And we'll look forward to a conversation with you, as I say, early and often this year. Keep up the great work at the Investigative Project on Terrorism, and we'll talk with you very soon. Next up, we'll drill down on this speech by the president of Egypt that the congressman mentioned with my colleague, Claire Lopez. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined by Claire Lopez, my colleague these days at the Center for Security Policy, where she is our Senior Vice President for Research and Analysis, and a woman who knows a lot about the problems we're addressing today from an intelligence background of a very high caliber. She was a career operations officer in the clandestine services of the Central Intelligence Agency for about 20 years, serving overseas and here in the United States, and has used that experience to really establish herself as one of the go-to people in the United States on matters involving the jihadist threat generally, and specifically that posed by Iran. Claire Lopez, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. I'm glad to be with you.
I wanted to visit with you about something that I talked a little bit about with Congressman Pete Hoekstra in the previous segment, namely the statement that was made by the president of Egypt, al-Sisi, in Al-Azhar University at the end of December. It has been widely described as a rather extraordinary statement, particularly in that setting. What are your views of what al-Sisi said and its implications?
Well, what the president of Egypt said to the combined clerical leadership of Al-Azhar, which was gathered to hear him at this momentous end-of-the-year speech, and what is the premier seat of Sunni Islamic learning for the last 1,000 years, what he said was basically that they, the leadership of Islamic thought and scholarship, are the ones responsible for the guidance, for the direction that Islam is taking. And he took them to task because of the impression and the image that the entire world is seeing, that Islam is something that is violent and oppressive. And certainly he must have been referring to what is going on with the Islamic State over in what used to be called Iraq or Syria.
This, of course, predated the attacks in Paris, but certainly underscored this general point. We're visiting with my colleague, the Senior Vice President for the Center for Security Policy's Research and Analysis Activities, Claire Lopez. And Claire, you were talking about al-Sisi confronting what some have described as kind of the Vatican of Sunni Islam and really calling them out in terms of the need to have them lead a revolution in our religion, as he put it. How is that being received, and to what extent do you think it will have an appreciable effect on the global jihad movement?
Well, I think the first thing to be said is that if you looked at the video that we have been made available to us of that speech, his audience is not terribly thrilled with him. They are sitting and listening politely. They clap politely. But this is not a message they want to hear. The point is that the president of Egypt, al-Sisi, has no standing in religious terms within Islam. He's got no authority to call for or to lead or to even urge any kind of changes in the doctrine or even the practice of Islam, and that's part of it. His speech is being received with much more, I think, applause in the West than in the world of Islam. And it has to be said that he is in a position right now where he's trying to consolidate his own power in Egypt, and certainly against the primary opponent of that consolidation, and that's the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. He also has to be mindful of his financial backers, which are in primarily the Gulf, meaning Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and United Arab Emirates, all of which have their own beefs with the Brotherhood.
But all of whom are also very much imbued with this Sharia program that he's really at least seemingly calling out. And Claire, I just want to talk about one piece of this that I'm particularly struck by. It's that the argument we have incessantly been hearing, mostly by people who know nothing about the subject, is that what we're confronting is a faction within the Muslim world, if they even dignify it as that, but people who are hijacking the faith, the true faith, the peaceful religion that is Islam. what the president of Egypt seems to me to have been doing when he went to Al-Azhar University and he confronted these clerics was actually saying, no, it is the authorities of Islam that are creating this violent jihadist program and not some extraneous or extremist forces. Is that a fair characterization of what we should take away from this at a minimum?
Well, to a certain extent. I mean, obviously the command to jihad, the supremacist command within Islam to conquer the world for Islam rests within the doctrine, the law, and the scriptures of Islam. Yes, the clerical leadership, and of which Al-Azhar is just one center of that, are responsible in a day-to-day way for, you know, carrying it out. But the fact is that Islam itself is a supremacist doctrine, and jihad is the vehicle for that.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point. I'm not meaning to say that the authorities of Islam have somehow gone off on a tear, but the point is that it is inherent in this Sharia doctrine specifically, and that the authorities of Islam believe that is the true faith. And are saying so, that is kind of the disconnect, it seems to me, that we've been hearing so much of late. The president of France, François Hollande, Obama, Holder, Howard Dean, among others, claiming that this has nothing to do with Islam, let alone, you know, the centerpiece of it. Claire, let me turn to a curious statement that was made subsequent to the one we've been discussing by the president of Egypt, by the leader of a designated terrorist organization called Hezbollah. As I say, you're one of the country's preeminent authorities on Iran and its various terrorist and other operations. There's no doubt in your mind, I know, that Hezbollah is a serious threat to the United States and the West more generally, imbued with the same Sharia doctrine. And yet we're hearing Hassan Nasrallah denouncing extremists for the attacks in Europe that are giving Islam a bad name. What's up with all that?
Right. Well, Hassan Nasrallah is the head of Iran's terror proxy. Hezbollah was, of course, one of the various leaderships, to include also Hamas and to include also the leadership of the Arab League, who denounced the attacks in Paris. Now, very carefully, they denounced the attacks at the offices of Charlie Hebdo, but they did not condemn the attacks on the Jewish kosher deli market, where four Jews were slaughtered that same day as well. And what Nasrallah said was that these are extremists who conducted this attack, and they are giving a bad name to Islam, a bad image. Very oddly, the very same phrase that President al-Sisi of Egypt uses, that these kinds of attacks give Islam a bad image, a bad name. It's nothing wrong with Islam, you know. It's the image that the Western world receives. But the other part of this with Hezbollah is of course, that Hezbollah currently is involved in a lengthy and a life-or-death struggle in Syria to prop up Iran's terror proxy regime in Damascus, the regime of Bashar al-Assad. And Hezbollah has been deeply committed there with thousands of troops for the last several years, losing many hundreds killed and injured, and spending a great deal of blood and treasure in the process.
So it's safe to say that Nasrallah has his own interests in confusing us further about the nature of the threat we're facing.
Exactly.
And is, in fact, a manifestation of it himself. Claire Lopez, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate the great work you do at the Center, and we look forward to having further conversations with you often in 2015. Keep up that great work and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Yossi Hollander joins us. We'll talk about his new movie, Pump, coming to iTunes. Why you better be watching it. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us: friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260. The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the White House said it should have had someone higher profile at the march in Paris to repudiate jihadist efforts to prevent free expression. It certainly was a mistake, but Team Obama has yet to admit to a far larger one. For 6 years now, it has sided with Islamic supremacists, demanding our submission to their Sharia blasphemy laws that dictate what is offensive and cannot be said on pain of death. For example, President Obama told the UN General Assembly in September 2012, quote, "The future must not belong to those who slander the Prophet of Islam," unquote. And in July 2011, then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced, "We would use," quote, "old-fashioned techniques like shaming and peer pressure," unquote, "to ensure American speech does not offend Muslims." Mr. President, repudiate Sharia blasphemy laws now. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
I am very pleased to be welcoming back Yossi Hollander, a man that I have come to know and admire greatly, not least for his activism and creativity in advancing a cause that ought to be really at the forefront of all of our thinking about not just our economic well-being, but our national security, and that is energy security. And Yossi Hollander, an entrepreneur by trade, an investor, now a filmmaker with a brand new film called Pump, a splendid documentary that has just come out on iTunes. Yossi has been making this case for fuel choice as a result of his understanding that in its absence, we are subjected to the extortion of outfits like OPEC. And Yossi, we've been talking in the previous segments about Paris and the global jihad movement. And I think it's a perfect segue to your ideas and thoughts and recommendations that the funding for much of that is, of course, coming from the petrodollars we're transferring to the bad guys. Happy New Year to you, sir. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Talk a little bit about Pump, the movie, and what its main message is about how we get fuel choice.
Well, it's a movie about our love for the car and how we've been taken for a ride for many years. But it also shows us that there is a way out, which is the normal way that America has always succeeded, and that's competition at the pump. There's plenty of fuels out there, and the most of them, even in today's prices, are even cheaper than oil. And if we just allowed people to use them both on their cars and in the pump, then there'll be competition. We know from anywhere around the world, when we had competition, including on fuels, the price went down. Now, the price went down in the last few months to less than 50, and still nobody understands exactly why. But it will. We all know from history it always goes up again, and many times at the whim of those companies. So some people say they're trying to bankrupt our industry right now. We show the cycle in the movie, okay, and we show that there are many ways out, and we just need to open the market so people can have all kinds of fuel they want to put in the car, not what the government tells them they need to put in the car.
And give us a sense of what the options are that fuel choice could involve.
So, of course, gasoline is an option, okay? Nobody says don't use gasoline only. But we also have ethanol, whether it's made from corn or whether it's made from natural gas. It can be made from natural gas. We have another fuel which racing cars use a lot called methanol, which in the United States we can produce at from natural gas, which we have an abundance of, between at a cost of between 50 to 70 cents a gallon. And we, of course, have natural gas for trucks like CNG and buses, and we also have electricity, which is coming around. So there's a lot of replacement. We don't need to subsidize everything. We just need to make sure they're available on the shelf.
And the impediments to integrating them into our automotive sector or transportation sector more generally, if you throw in trucks and natural gas, Yossi, what are they at this point, and what are you recommending we do to overcome them?
So right now, your regular car theoretically cannot take any other fuel unless it's flex fuel. But a car is already built to take both ethanol and methanol, basically any liquid fuel, just by changing largely your computer program, maybe some small rubber parts at the cost of at a maximum $300 with labor. In many cases, it's just software. And it's all blocked because there are regulations today that prevent us from modifying the car after it left the factory. And all we need to do is to tell, hey, guys, you can start activating, use American innovation, open the computer of the car, start changing it, improve the efficiency, improve, allow it to run on a different on different fuel. It's only a switch today. Every car is already can run on multiple fuels in the same tank in any mixture. And all you have to do is change some computer tables and open a switch. Nothing more than jailbreaking your iPhone.
Are there legal impediments to making that switch at the moment, and how do those have to be overcome?
Yes, there is, because there is a section of the Clean Air Act that does not allow you to modify your car after it left the factory. But that was originally done because people used to remove the catalytic converter back in the 80s, if people recall that. So right now we have an option to make a lot of changes without removing the catalytic converter, and these changes are controlled by regulations, and they're really within the administration's ability to modify those regulations so we can actually make computer changes and fuel changes to the car, as long as they don't create greater pollution, which is fine. We just need to modify the regulations so we can they'll be more, shall we say, business-friendly.
And because the sorts of changes that you're talking about, natural gas, ethanol, methanol, are and electric vehicles, of course, are all far less polluting than gasoline, that shouldn't be an impediment as far as the EPA regulations are concerned.
In principle, it is. In principle, it isn't. But the problem is that the procedure to prove that is so cumbersome and expensive that people just give up it and don't go for it.
So this basically requires direction from the White House to have this change made. Is that essentially it? And if so, Yossi Hollander, again, is our guest, an entrepreneur, an investor, the founder and chairman of our Energy Policy Foundation and co-founder of Fuel Freedom Foundation, the one of the filmmakers behind Pump, a documentary that is now available on iTunes. Yossi, this is something that I am convinced we are going to do. It's just a question of when and under how bad the circumstances. For example, as I'm looking at this business with the Saudis driving down the price of oil, as you say, part of a cycle of manipulation that they've engaged in along with OPEC for decades, principally, it seemed, aimed at undermining any effort towards real fuel or energy independence on our part. The Saudis are probably one serious terrorism attack away from having much of their oil production taken offline. They'd very nearly had that happen to them a few years back at one of their major refineries. Were that to happen, my guess is you may have $300 a barrel oil, not the $50 that we have today, and a need for this kind of fuel choice, and presumably at that point, decisions made to get out of the way of doing it. But it may be far harder to do than it would be under present-day circumstances. So how do people listening to this program get involved in the effort to try to ensure that we have fuel choice now, not just under very difficult, if not emergency, circumstances?
I think first of all is to learn and understand what we can do and what are the options we have and how we got to where we are. And that's what the movie is doing. It really, I think even experts that think that they know get out of this movie and says, I did not know. And I think that's important to watch the movie and get 10 more people to watch the movie together with you or after you've watched it and became convinced. And there we have a lot of action items, which are most of them very businesslike. For example, writing a petition to Walmart, Costco, Wawa, Kroger to put alternative fuel pumps in the gas station. I think we need to activate American businesses, not just the government, in order to make that change.
Is the supply available if a Target or Walmart would want to do that?
Nationwide, probably not immediately. It takes time to build some of it, but there's enough supply to do certainly a few states. And there's a lot of methanol. There's a lot of methanol capacity being built right now in Louisiana, utilizing our natural gas. So there should be a methanol glut available within a year or two.
Well, this really does seem to me, we've got something of a glut on gas, natural gas right now, a no-brainer to turn this into something we could use in our transportation sector. Yossi Hollander, we're at the end of our time. I'm so sorry to say it's flown by, but we've learned much from you. And I really commend people your superb, short, but very, very informative documentary, Pump. You can now find it on iTunes starting today. Take a look at it. And then get it to your friends, and let's see what we can do to get enough people here in Washington paying attention to give us what we need, which is fuel choice. Yossi Hollander, again, thank you for your time and the great work you're doing at, among other things, the Fuel Freedom Foundation. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Bruce Bechtel joins us next. We'll talk about North Korean hacking. What to expect next? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today,
all right, let's go,
or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country. the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Dr. Bruce Bechtel, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving the so-called Hermit Kingdom. And that would be North Korea. He is today an associate professor of political science at Angelo State University. He's also the president of the International Council on Korean Studies, but in a previous life, for some 20 years, he served on active duty in the United States Marine Corps in the Western Pacific and East Asia, much of it, and he also served as an intelligence officer with the Defense Intelligence Agency, rising ultimately to become its senior analyst for Northeast Asia, a man, in short, who knows a lot about this inscrutable place in Pyongyang and the country that it abuses. Bruce Bechtel, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, and Happy New Year to you, sir.
Thank you, Frank. It's always great to be on your show.
Thank you. Well, let's start, Bruce, by talking a bit about this event that took place in the latter days of 2014. It is allegedly an attack by North Korea against Sony Pictures in the United States that did considerable damage to both its reputation and its proprietary information. Do you think that the United States government is correct in assessing the blame for that attack on North Korea?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the FBI, you know, has stated several times they have solid evidence. And there's also no doubt, as you and I both know, South Korea, major entities there have been hacked several times, television, radio networks, government websites, etc. So South Korean officials and experts were able to work with our officials and show them a template and modus operandi for the North Korean cyber warfare units, if you will. So I think we're on pretty solid ground that this actually came from North Korea.
When you assess that, it suggests something that probably strains credulity for most Americans, and that is, here you have a country that is so backward that it's actually allowed its people to starve to death by the millions. It's widely understood to have very limited electrification, let alone access to the internet. Is all that true? And if so, how on earth could it be that it might have potentially first world cyber warfare capabilities, Bruce Bechtel?
Well, it's very true that North Korea is one of the least wired nations on Earth. And that's really not because they don't have electrification, although, as you know, at night, that's certainly an issue. There could be millions more people that had access to the internet in North Korea, but the reason they don't is because information is so tightly controlled in the DPRK. In fact, more tightly controlled even than it was in the old Soviet Union. So what we have is a country of 24.5 million people where you probably have less than 25,000 people who even have access to the internet. It's quite compelling.
When you talk about this, Bruce, one of the things that I've been struck by is that for a country that has these kinds of limited capabilities to be able to really exercise the kind of sophisticated cyber warfare operations that were evidently involved in this attack and others, notably against the South Korean government, it's doing it through China. What exactly is the relationship? We know that the Chinese government, of course, has been a sponsor and enabler of this North Korean regime for decades. But what specifically, as you understand it, is the relationship between the Reconnaissance General Bureau and the so-called Bureau 121 that is sort of the core, we're told, of the hacking capabilities of North Korea and their Chinese counterparts?
Well, information that I have seen shows that going back a few years, and when I say a few years, I mean probably about 5-6 years, as far as I can tell, the Chinese actually helped to train North Korean operatives, both in China, which is where North Koreans typically would go to train on weapon systems with the Chinese, which this really is in their mind, and a few in North Korea as well. There's no direct evidence that I have seen that the Chinese have done anything to enable North Korea's cyber warfare capability other than perhaps provide them equipment, which means sell it to them. But certainly they've allowed the North Koreans to set up their servers in China, and that to me suggests there's probably implicit knowledge of what the North Koreans are doing. Now, along those lines, the North Koreans have also diversified. Apparently they have servers that have these capabilities and that have been used in Japan and in certain nations in Latin America as well. But certainly this attack appears to have come from China, so that appears to be where their most robust capability exists.
But let me drill down on that a little bit with you. Again, our guest is Dr. Bruce Bechtel. He is an associate professor of political science at Angelo State University these days, but with a long background in intelligence aimed at the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, the North Korean regime. To the extent that the Chinese actually have not only North Korean servers on their territory, but North Korean hackers, at the very least, as you say, it would seem that they have been able to monitor what these guys are up to And that would indeed conduce to it having implicit knowledge. But isn't that, as a practical matter, all that it takes to make them complicit in the sorts of attacks that have taken place? There were episodes we've talked about before of North Korean flights to Pakistan and elsewhere overflying Chinese territory with the full knowledge of the Chinese government that they were carrying ballistic missiles or perhaps nuclear capabilities or other weapons of mass destruction of other kinds. Doesn't that constitute complicity as a practical matter?
Well, it does to me. And, you know, we've seen this problem with China involving North Korea for many years now. You know, it's the same old story, depending on what capability you're talking about, whether it's China not clamping down on nuclear technology-related materials going from China into North Korea, or, you know, uranium enrichment materials overflying China and then missiles overflying them again to go back to Pakistan, or, you know, the Chinese even saying they don't see any evidence that the North Koreans sank the Chonan, the corvette they sank back in 2010, which is ridiculous. But we continue to see the Chinese looking the other way when it comes to North Korea's rogue state activities, because they like having that buffer state between them and United States forces that exist on the Korean Peninsula and the South.
That's what really makes this such an important story, I think, beyond the direct threat that is being posed to us by the North Koreans, is that there does seem to be this kind of complicity and support being given not just to the regime itself, but to some of its activities by a peer competitor of a very aggressive character, namely Communist China. Bruce Bechtel, again, we're being told that there are large numbers of these hackers in either China or in North Korea, that we are confronting this kind of cyber threat from the North. What do you expect next will be coming, especially if the North Koreans are of a mind to retaliate in response to the proportionate response President Obama has announced?
Well, if one is to use the precedent of what they've done in South Korea, we can expect more attacks again and again. And we can expect probably fairly sophisticated attacks, as this was, because they've been hitting South Korean industry, entertainment, NGOs, government, etc., about every 4 or 5 months for the past 3 years now. So if they're going to follow the same precedent with the United States that they have been doing with South Korea for about 3 years now, we can expect more attacks on U.S. business, on perhaps government websites. You know, that's the next step. Maybe on websites of NGOs that that do anti-North Korean research. You know, for example, human rights research. We could probably expect those kinds of things targeting the United States in the next few months and the next few years.
We will be tracking that closely, as I know will you, my friend, Dr. Bruce Bechtel. Thank you for the great work you do at Angelo State University and for your past service to our country, and that you continue to render by joining us from time to time. I hope you'll do it often in 2015. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afton. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.